we go. All right. So we had Daniel 2, pretty impressive. Daniel 7, blow away. Daniel 8, like, that's crazy. How about Daniel 9? All right. In the first year of Darius, son of Xerxes, a Mede by descent. By the way, Xerxes was not the emperor of the Persian Empire. He was the king of the Babylonian province within the Persian Empire. He was a Mede. It was the Medo-Persian Empire, right? And so basically they had to have sort of dual rulers, if you will. So Cyrus the Persian ruled over the whole kingdom, and Darius the Mede ruled over the greatest province within the kingdom, which was Babylon. In the first year of his reign, the year is 537, possibly 536 BC. Okay? Now, wait a minute. What year was Daniel taken into captivity? You guys haven't memorized this yet? Just kidding. 605 BC. So now it's 537, 536 BC. Daniel's now been held as a hostage. I don't know if he's even a hostage anymore since Babylon is destroyed. All right. It's been about 68 and a half or 69 years. So what Daniel's doing is he's having a quiet time. He's having a quiet time in the book of Jeremiah. He's either reading Jeremiah 25 or possibly Jeremiah 29. And he noticed something. I, Daniel, understood from the scriptures, according to the word of the Lord given to Jeremiah, the prophet, that the desolation of Jerusalem would last 70 years. So I turned to the Lord God and I pleaded with him in prayer, in petition and fasting and in sackcloth and ashes. Prayed to the Lord my God and confessed, Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps his covenant of love with those who love him, keep his commandments. We have sinned and we have done wrong. We have been wicked. We have rebelled. We have turned away from your commands and laws. We have not listened to your servants, the prophets who speak in your name, to our kings, our princes, and our ancestors, to all the people of the land. Lord, you are righteous, but to this day we are covered with shame. The people of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem and all Israel, both near and far, in all these countries where you have scattered us because of our unfaithfulness to you. We are kings, our princes, and our ancestors. Daniel chapter 9, we're in verse 8. Our covered shame. Lord, because we have sinned against you, the Lord our God is merciful and forgiving. Even though we've rebelled against him, we have not obeyed the Lord our God or kept his laws he gave us through his servants, the prophets. All Israel has transgressed your law and turned away, refusing to obey you. I want you to notice a model that Daniel is setting here, which is one that I believe we have not incorporated into our spiritual lives, which is Daniel's taking corporate responsibility for the sin of the people. So the leader of the church doesn't say, God, forgive this member for doing this. God, forgive us. Okay? We Christians have really messed up. I mean, we did the Crusades. We were anti-Semites. I'm saying take corporate responsibility even for the stuff that really we had almost nothing to do with. Because how many of these things did Daniel himself do? Like, basically none of them. Another great example of this is actually Nehemiah chapter 1. Same thing. If you read Nehemiah chapter 1, he says, we. So when we pray, let us confess not just for ourselves, but let us confess for the church. Let's accept corporate responsibility because we are a family. And what the family has done wrong, we have done wrong. And that's, for us Americans, we are particularly prone not to do this because we're very individualistic. Why are Americans so individualistic? It's our history. That's how we formed. We said, don't tread on me. You know, why did we even come here? We're a bunch of rebels. I mean, that's good or bad, I don't know. I mean, so what countries are like this? Australia and the United States. We're the worst. You know? It's Australia formed kind of different but the same. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, don't tread on me, you know. We formed to rebel against authority. And so we hate authority. That's good and bad. It's both good and bad. It's a mixture. But in Christianity, we just need to be aware of that weakness. Here, especially in America, in the West more generally, but in America especially, we are highly individualistic. The biblical perspective is very different from that. Question, point? We can speak about the evils that are being committed by our fellow students or even Christians. We can take corporate responsibility for what we as students at Cal State San Bernardino have done. And in our ministries, there's sin in our churches. Okay? And I think the leaders might be tempted to think, well, at least luckily I'm not like that. You know, I hope we don't have that exact attitude. But so this is a great example. Moving on. Therefore, the curses and sworn judgments written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, have been poured out on us. So point number one is taking corporate responsibility. And point number two is, God, the bad stuff that's happening to us, it's happened to us because we need it. You are right. All right? You know, the current bad stuff happening is not because you are not a righteous God. It's because you are a righteous God. All right? Written in the law of Moses. We're talking about specifically Deuteronomy 28 and 29, if you want to know. I mean, Deuteronomy 28 and 29 happened right in front of Daniel's eyes. Read it. All right. You have fulfilled the word spoken against us and against our rulers by bringing on us great disaster. Again, read Deuteronomy 28 and 29. All right. Under the whole heaven, nothing has ever been done like what has been done to Jerusalem. Just as it is written in the law of Moses, all of this disaster has come on us. Yet we have not sought the favor of the Lord our God by turning from our sins and giving attention to your truth. The Lord did not hesitate to bring disaster on us because God rules the nations. For the Lord our God is righteous in everything he does, yet we have not obeyed him. Now, Lord our God, who brought your people out of Egypt with a mighty hand, who made for yourself a name that endures to this day. We have sinned. We have done wrong. Lord, in keeping with all your righteous acts, turn away your anger and your wrath. Point number one, corporate responsibility. Point number two, God, you are right in your judgments. Point number three, boldness. Where do we have the standing for boldness? Is by acknowledging our sin and acknowledging that God is right in his judgments. In fact, you would think after acknowledging what a wretch you were and how much you deserved everything that has happened, you would think you'd be, you know, quiet and like a little mouse, but not Daniel. Oh, no, not at all. Lord, in keeping with all your righteous acts, turn away your anger and your wrath in Jerusalem, your city, your holy hill. Our sins and iniquities of our ancestors have made Jerusalem and your people an object of scorn to all these around us. Now, our God, hear our prayers and petitions for your servant. For your sake, Lord, look with favor on your desolate sanctuary. Give ear, our God, and hear. God, open your eyes. Are you taking a nap or something like that? Come on, God. I mean, I'm reading Jeremiah. Have you ever read Jeremiah, God? I mean, you wrote it. Hello. You know, I'm kind of exaggerating, but that I get that sense that Daniel's like, come on. He expects great stuff. We do not make requests of you because we are righteous, but because of your great mercy. Lord, listen. Lord, forgive. Lord, hear and act. For your sake, my God, do not delay because your city and your people bear your name. I love this, verse 20. While I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and make my request to the Lord my God and his holy hill, while I was still in prayer, Gabriel the man, he's really an angel actually, Archangel Gabriel, I had seen in the earlier vision, came to me in swift flight about the time of the evening sacrifice. He instructed me and said to me, Daniel, I've now come to give you insight and understanding as soon as you began to pray. Right while you were still praying, a word went out, which I've come to tell you for your highly esteemed. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. So this is a great one. I love this one. Okay, so 77s, right? See, once you, there you go. There's the set. Maybe I can skip this one. There you go. Yeah, I already did all that stuff. Good. All right. 77s. 70 times 7. Oh, math student, 70 times 7. Oh, you can do it. Come on. 7 times 7, add a 0. 490. Okay, good. 77 is a decree for your people in your holy city to finish transgression, to put an end to sin. By the way, if there ever were a messianic prophecy anywhere in the Bible, it's either Isaiah 9 or Daniel 9. I mean, if there's ever were a messianic prophecy. Okay? To atone for wickedness, bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. No one understand this? From the time the word goes out to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, Messiah, the ruler comes, there will be 7 sevens and 62 sevens. It will be rebuilt with streets and a trench, but in times of trouble. Okay, so what's this 77s? From the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, what's that about? Was there ever a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem? What about the decree of Cyrus in 538 BC? That's in Ezra chapter 1. That was a decree to go back and restore the temple, but not the city. Then there's the decree of Darius in Ezra, I think it's chapter 3. What's it say? It's not up there. Ezra 3, I think it is. Darius 520 BC, that Darius said, you Jews, Cyrus told you to build the temple. Why haven't you built the temple? Go and build the stupid temple. Well, that stupid temple, build the temple. And they finally did. Haggai, right? Zechariah, 516 BC. 70 years after the destruction of Jerusalem, exactly 70 years later, the temple was rebuilt. All right? So Daniel says, hey, God, you said you'd save after 70 years. So God, save us. It's been 70 years. And God says, how about 70 times 7 years instead? Because that's going to be the real salvation. When was the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem? That's in Ezra chapter 7, the 7th year of Artaxerxes. Cambyses, right? Cyrus, Cambyses, Darius, Xerxes, Artaxerxes. The 7th year of Artaxerxes, who began to rule in 465 BC, is 458 BC. All right. Now, could somebody please subtract 490 from 458? Come on. Yeah, do we have any science majors? Negative 32. Negative 32. What year would that be? 32 AD. Got you on that one. No 33 AD. Because there's no year zero. Oh, do you see what Daniel just did? He said, 490 years after this decree to restore and build Jerusalem, whose decree was not given for nearly 100 years after Daniel made this prophecy, all right, the Messiah is going to come to Jerusalem to put an end to sin, to bring in everlasting righteousness. That's sort of cool. Now, actually, though, if you look a little bit closer, see, remember he says 7 sevens and 62 sevens? 7 plus 62, that's 69. So actually, the detail of the prophecy is during the 70th week, sometime during the 70th week. So he's not saying the Lord's going to come to Jerusalem in 33 A.D., he said the Lord's going to come to Jerusalem somewhere between 26 A.D. and 33 A.D. So what's split the difference? How about 30 A.D.? All right? That's when Jesus came to Jerusalem. So you got it, folks? You got it? Somewhere between 26 and 33 A.D. All right. That's kind of impressive. All right? Now let's say you wanted to claim to be the Messiah. You kind of missed out here because, somewhere around, you had to come to Jerusalem in 30 AD. Sorry. It's too late for you. All right? And then he goes on and he describes the events that Jesus also prophesied. All right? Let me see. The people of the ruler will come, and that is the Rome. His name is Vespasian. I already talked about Vespasian, correct? God waited 40 years. You know, Jesus was crucified 30 AD, the curtain torn in two, and God in his wisdom and mercy said to the Jews, you've got 40 years. Then you read Hebrews 10 verse, what is it, 13 or something like that. What is old and fading will soon disappear. Got it? The end will come like a flood. War will continue until the end, and the desolations have been decreed. He will confirm a covenant with many for 1:7. In the middle of the seven, he will put an end to sacrifice and offering. At the temple, he will set up the abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him. Okay, now there's the last vision of Daniel, which is Daniel all the way from 10 all the way through Daniel 12. This is the greatest of all the visions. I'm not going to cover it all because it's just too much stuff. All right? So in Daniel 1, in the third year of Cyrus, this is also the first year of Darius. His message is true. He has this vision, and he sees this vision. He passes out for 3 weeks. He's you know, the angel has to touch him twice. It's kind of get him to not be passed out. An overwhelming vision, verse 16. All right. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and began to speak. I said to the one standing before me, I am overcome with anguish. This vision concerned a terrible, horrible thing that's going to happen to God's people. We're talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. All right. And then chapter 11, verse 2, the king of the south and the north. Now then I tell you the truth, 3 more kings will arise in Persia, and then a fourth will be far richer. I can tell you who they are. All right, Cambyses. It's Cyrus, Cambyses, Darius, and then Xerxes, the most powerful of all the Persian emperors. The one who fought the Battle of Marathon. He kind of lost that one, but then he fought the one there, you know, the 300, you know that movie? Right? Defeated Sparta and all that kind of stuff. All right, then a mighty king will arise, who will rule with great power, verse 3. That is Alexander the Great. After he has risen, his empire will be broken up and parceled to the four winds of heaven. Antigonus, Cassander, Lysimachus, and Ptolemy. All this sort of stuff. Then it starts in verse 5. Now, I'm not going to cover chapter 11 except occasionally. Does somebody have a copy of my Daniel book? Because I need to... All right, I'll take that. I hope the pages are the same, because when I wrote these notes, it might have been an earlier edition. Let's see if I get lucky. If not, I'll say, oh, sorry about that. All right, so basically, he talks about the kings of the south and the kings of the north. I can't remember, do I have a table of this? Oh, yeah, so this is the end of Daniel 9, the destruction of Jerusalem by Titus. That's the Titus arch there in Rome, where you can see those are the Jews, the slaves carrying the items from the temple into Rome and all that sort of stuff. There's Titus. All right, the kings of the south. These are Ptolemy and his descendants. And the kings of the north are Seleucus and his descendants. So if you read starting in Daniel 11, verse 5, you can name which of the descendants he's talking about. All right? So he'll say, all right, the king of the south, that'll be the first Ptolemy, will become strong, but one of his commanders will become even stronger. That's Seleucus, right, than he, and will rule his own kingdom with great power. After some years, they'll become allies, blah, blah, blah. So this is just a nice detailed history of a roughly 250 years of the relationship between the Seleucids and the Ptolemies. All right? Let me see. What do I have in my notes? It says here, read this. All right, page 196. It may work, it may not. If it doesn't work, I'll just say, oh, that's a good try. All right, yeah. So verse 5. So by the year 315 BC, Ptolemy the First Soter, the founder, you're reading Daniel, I'm reading the history book, okay? All right? You're reading Daniel, and I'm reading the history book. will establish himself in Egypt. In the battle in 312 BC with the strongest competitor, Antigonus, he will rise to become the predominant successor to Alexander. However, Ptolemy's greatest general, Seleucus, the one who's defeated Antigonus, will break away from him, etc. Got it? This Daniel 11 is why even those skeptics who hate the Bible, don't believe in God, they say, well, obviously this, all right, yeah, okay. So the only solution they have is to date Daniel after the events. And why is that crazy? Well, because all their arguments are bogus. Plus, what about Daniel 7, you know? What about Daniel 9? How do they explain that? What do? Ignore it. Okay? So starting in verse 21 of Daniel 11, we start talking about Antiochus Epiphanes. I'm not going to cover all this. All right, verse 25, he'll, with a large army, he will stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south. The king of the south will wage war with a large and very powerful army, but he will not be able to stand because of the plots devised against him. Those who eat from the king's provisions, etc., etc. And then it talks about the ships from the west. Rome will intervene and save Ptolemy from Antiochus Epiphanes, etc. Yeah, verse 30, ships of the western coastlands will oppose him. I can tell you who the Roman admiral is who did this. All right, good. Verse 31. His armed forces, now this is the beginning of the end for the Jews, the terrible times. His armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. They'll set up the abomination that causes desolation. That's that statue of Zeus with the face of Antiochus the Great. Antiochus Epiphanes means God came down. The Jews called him Antiochus Epimenes, which is Antiochus the crazy guy. That's what they called him. All right. With flattery, he'll corrupt those who have violated the covenant, but the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. Read 2 Maccabees. When they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the wise will stumble so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will come at the appointed time. All right? And again, the Jews were refined and purified greatly. And when the Maccabees rebelled and kicked out Antiochus Epiphanes, like I said, it was a time of great revival in the kingdom. Now, I'm not going to cover Daniel 11:36 through 45. But it is a prophecy regarding the Battle of Actium. The Battle of Actium, which is in 30 BC. And this was the final battle in which the final dynasty was defeated. The last Greek king was actually a queen. Her name was Cleopatra. You know, the whole thing with, Shakespeare's, you know, the Julius Caesar and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. That's about the destruction of Cleopatra and her buddy. What's his name? Mark Anthony. Yeah, thank you, Mark Anthony. All right, so let's get to Daniel 12. We got 5 minutes to go. All right. Here you go. The Battle of Actium. There you go. Don't have time to cover that. Here you go. Daniel 12. Verse 1. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, arise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Now, Daniel, God does through Daniel what God does through John. So John describes things in Revelation that will soon take place. He says it twice. He says right at the beginning, this vision regards things which will soon take place. And then in Revelation 22, it says this is about things which will soon take place. But then, at the end of Revelation 20, he fast forwards, right? And then there's the judgment seat, the final resurrection, heaven, hell. That's exactly what Daniel does. So what Daniel does is right here in verse 2 of Daniel 12, he's fast forwarding to the end. Got it? Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, and others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens. Those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, roll up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. So Daniel says at the end of time, we're all going to rise. Some to everlasting life. Some who will shine like stars forever and ever. And others who will go to everlasting contempt. Do you believe in the final resurrection? Are you sure you really, I mean, don't you ever like, you know, my body's going to rot. Am I really actually, I mean, do I actually believe this? Don't you ever have that moment of like, I'm not sure I'm supposed to believe it. Oh, yeah, I guess I believe it. I don't know. Do you guys ever have any doubts? I guess you don't. You guys are more spiritual than I am. Every once in a while, I'm like, do I really actually believe this stuff? You know, really? I mean, I'm a scientist, you know. What happens to those molecules? What is it that gets revived? You know, come on, let's be real. But you know what? Daniel said that it was going to be the 11th king. And that the 11th king would take out three previous kings. He'd be a prideful jerk. He'd try to set times and laws. Well, that's what happened. And he said, out of one of the four will come a fifth king who will rise and take the beautiful land, and he will desecrate the temple and put an end to sacrifice. That happened. And then he says, what's he say? He says this. He says, multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, and others to shame and everlasting contempt. You know what? I believe it. Amen. Do I ever doubt? Well, yeah, I've got those moments. I'm like, that's kind of crazy. I mean, can I really say to my scientist friends, yeah. Daniel said it. I believe it. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens. And those who share their faith this summer and baptize a bunch of people, right? Here's your evangelism passage, right here. Those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. I believe it. I believe it. Daniel, prophet to the nations. Now, I'm not going to go over it, but later on Daniel says, because this is pretty overwhelming, this vision. And he passes out for days, and I mean, he's blown away, he's pale, he's like dead. So he says, God, you know, explain all this stuff. God says, you know what, Daniel, just be quiet. Go your way. People are going to come, people are going to go. You just do the right thing. And that's good enough for me. All right, so that's our class. I think we have 5 or 10 minutes for a quick Q&A, if you want or not. And yeah. Ask them.
Fair enough.
I don't know what they say. I know what they say about a lot of prophecies. I know what they say about the virgin being with child. I know what they say about the piercing of hands and feet. I know what they say about those things. In fact, if you look at the translation in Daniel 9, there's a possible way to interpret it to say that it might be talking about a king, but not necessarily the Messiah. The anointed one, the ruler comes. But, you know, to me, when I see that he will, he's going to bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophecy, where it says, anoint the most holy place in verse 25. All right. Another translation is anoint the most holy one. So out of, I guess, scholarly caution, the NIV says most holy place to leave at least an opening, maybe, for another possible interpretation. But like I said, come on. Was there ever a messianic prophecy anywhere in the Bible? Hello, this is a messianic prophecy. So I don't know. I don't know what they do. I guess they just go to the next passage or something. Yeah.
This is on topic, but you didn't really focus on it.
Okay.
But in the prophecy in which Daniel sees the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven, I see a lot of claims that the Son of Man is like a divine title. Why do people think that?
Well, all right. So Jesus is known as the Son of Man and as the Son of God. Yep. Yes?
Yeah.
Right. And so, and Jesus literally is the Son of people and the Son of God. He's both. So he's both human and divine. So the Son of Man is a relatively generic title because Ezekiel's called Son of Man and Daniel's called Son of Man. Jesus is also called Son of Man, but he's Son of Man clearly in a special way. So calling him Son of Man means he's human. And calling him Son of God means he's divine. And of course, as we understand, Jesus is both divine and human.
So you wouldn't say in Daniel it's necessarily teaching that the Son of Man is a divine title?
Not necessarily.
Divine. I'm just asking about like.
I just let the context speak. I mean, possibly there it's referring to a divine being.
Okay.
But we know that Ezekiel's not a divine being. And Daniel's also called Son of Man. Right? So Son of Man is a more generic term, and Jesus is Son of Man, but he's the only Son of God, John chapter 1. Right. So Son of Man is more generic. Jesus is Son of Man because our understanding, the Council of Chalcedon, is that he is perfectly human and perfectly divine. Yep. Yeah. God rules the nations, do not fear. And that means God rules the situation you're in.
Yeah.
Again, how many times did I stress, did it feel at the time like God was in control? The clear answer was
no.
No. But we should do what Daniel did in chapter 9 and understand that, you know, God's is sovereign and he does what he will, and that will include discipline, even judgment. So really the main application of Daniel for y'all is chapter 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I mean, that's the main, and that's the thing. All right, the big picture is 2 and 7 through 12, which is that God rules the nations. It's like the book of Revelation. Summarize the book of Revelation. God wins, Satan loses. Okay, that's it. Then you can read Revelation 2 and 3. Have some real practical stuff, you know, avoid this. All right, so Revelation 2 and 3. All right, Daniel 1, 3 through 6. You know, that's the main thing probably we should take is those practical lessons of what it looks like to be a faithful person of God. Because Daniel 2 and 7 through 12 is God rules the nations. God's in control. End of, you know, that it's a big long way of saying one simple fact, but the details are kind of blow away version of that. So hopefully you go away impressed, like, whoa, the Bible. Oh my goodness, the Bible is the Word of God. That's so cool. But then you'll go home and you'll study 1 and 3 through 6, and kind of that's going to help you figure out what to do when stuff happens. Good question. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Summary of a timeline of like when Daniel's in captivity and him prophesying, or like,
yeah,
talking about the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar.
I tried to do that. So Nebuchadnezzar took the throne around 607, 608 from his father Nebuchadnezzar, and one of his first campaigns was to come to Jerusalem. That's 605 BC. All right. And Daniel at that time, along with his friends, around 15 years old, is kind of a guess, almost certainly less than 20. I'm sure he was more than 10. All right. So we'll say somewhere in their teens. All right, and then Daniel 1 and Daniel 2 and Daniel 3 all happen within a couple of years of that, in the 605, 604, 603. All right, and then Daniel 4, we're fast forwarding about 30 years to around 575, 570 BC. Daniel 4 is the only one that's kind of later on in the rule of Nebuchadnezzar. By the time we get to Daniel 5, Nebuchadnezzar is out of the picture. All right, and then we have Belshazzar. So that's 538, 539 BC. So this is 68 years roughly after Daniel was taken to captivity. He's now, 83, 85 years old. All right, Belshazzar, he dies that night at Daniel 5. And Cyrus, his army, what I didn't tell you is Herodotus explains what was happening. Cyrus physically wasn't actually there. It was one of his generals. Cyrus was somewhere else. But his armies have surrounded Babylon. And what they do is they dammed the river. They stopped the Euphrates because it had this massive wall. Nobody could get over this impregnable wall, but there was a hole on the beginning and the end because the river ran right through the city. So they dried up the river. Their armies went through the dry riverbed. And while Daniel 5 was happening, the other parts of the city were already being occupied. 538 BC. Okay? Daniel lived for at least two more years, maybe three or even more. We don't really know. And so the later parts of Daniel are happening under the Persians. So like I said, in Daniel 7, when he's prophesying what would happen with Persia, that's not such a great prophecy. Actually, I mean, that's almost predictable. It's the later stuff that's amazing. And so Daniel dies around, I don't know, 535 BC. By that time, probably already some of the Jews have gone back to Jerusalem to under the decree of Cyrus. There's the Cyrus cylinder, which is in the British Museum. It's right there. It's about this big. It's really cool. It's not Ezra chapter 1, but it's the version of Ezra chapter 1 that he gave to all the other peoples. Basically, Cyrus, unlike any previous ruler, said, hey, look, people who've been taken by these horrible Babylonians and Assyrians, go home, rebuild your cities, and restart your religions. We want you to have freedom of religion. Cyrus was a very forward-looking leader, which is one reason Persia was so successful. Okay? And then, 516 BC, so now Daniel's been dead for close to 20 years, finally, Cyrus's decree to rebuild the temple is finished. So that Haggai said, hey guys, you know, you're putting paneling on your house, you should be building the temple. So. Okay? And then it's, Alexander the Great, 335 BC, so that's around 200 years later. The Persian Empire's its period of greatness was a little over 200 years. And then the Greeks come in. Alexander, of course, very short rule, but Greece, the world became Hellenized because of Alexander. All right, and so, but that was not so much Alexander, it was his successors, the five, lines that came from that. Antiochus the Great, around 200 BC, so that's 130 years later. That's the one who conquered Palestine from the Ptolemies. And then it's either his nephew or his grandson, I can't remember, Antiochus Epiphanes. He's the bad guy in this story.
Helping us grow in our wisdom and understand the book of Daniel. So do you have more books today?
They already learned, but you didn't yet. Unfortunately, the books arrived at my house last night. Tony basically messed up. However, I sent the link to Kyle, and so you can get the e-version of Daniel. And the ones who didn't get it today, next Friday, you'll get your hard copy. So sorry about that.
Oh, no. So it is 1207. 12:30, the lunch is going to be here. We're having In-N-Out for you guys. And so I think in the meantime, for the next 25 minutes or so, are you going to be here until the end of the afternoon?
At least through lunch.
Okay. Well, yeah, usually. Each worker deserves their wages. So we're going to have lunch, and then we're going to close out with a lesson by Rafael Lua.
Come on, Rafael.
But maybe for these next 25 minutes, if we can break off in our D groups and just in processing all these 12 chapters of Daniel and the lesson that we have heard of, maybe how we can apply that to our ministries, our D groups, our schools, our personal lives, just how we can be faithful to God when it doesn't look like the circumstances that He is in control. So for the next 25 minutes or so, and then we'll have some time of lunch. So yeah, thanks guys. Thank you, John. So at this time, if you have any other questions, he'll be here and be around. So thank you. All right.
Thank you.